Hello everyone, my name is Graham Rutherford. I'm an alcoholic and I'm a member of the There Is a Solution group of Alcoholics Anonymous, which meets in Virginia Beach on a Monday night and a Thursday night. So if you're ever in Virginia Beach, you're very welcome to come along. My sobriety date is October the 19th, 1997, and I can't really take any credit for that because I believe I'm sober today because of Alcoholics Anonymous and the actions of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So the reason that Heather and I drove 4.5 hours to come up here tonight is because it's my experience that I have to be willing to go to any lengths to stay sober. And because Alcoholics Anonymous has really given me a wonderful life beyond my wildest dreams, and it seems that in order to keep that, I have to give it away. So that's why I'm here tonight. I'm here because it's going to help me. If anybody gets anything out of this, that's wonderful. But anyway, so really all I'm going to do is share in a general way what happened to me, what I was like, what happened to me, and what I'm like now. And I'll try to do that to the best of my ability. And we'll be out of here by 7 o'clock. So, anyway, I'm obviously not from Virginia. I was born in Scotland, and I was born into a normal family. My parents are not alcoholics. My parents very rarely drink. I think I can honestly say I've never seen either of them drunk. I never heard any fighting in my house. My parents, I've never heard them cursing. They're very, very nice people. And I was brought up very well to know right from wrong and to be a nice person, just like my parents. I have three lovely sisters who are not alcoholics. They're normal people, and they have good lives, and they have good relationships in their lives, and one of them has children. They're nice people. But I ended up, by my teenage years, a violent fall-down alcoholic. And I would just like to say that, for me, that is absolutely nothing to do with my family. I've also met people in AA who came from insane alcoholic families, and they ended up the same as me. So, over the years, what I've come to understand for me is that whatever's wrong with me, and believe you me, there is something wrong with me, as I'm about to tell you, some of the symptoms or whatever it is that's wrong with me, but whatever that is absolutely nothing to do with my mother and father. But see, when I was drinking, I thought it was everything to do with them. I thought it was their fault that I was the way I was. And I see now, being in Alcoholics Anonymous, that really they're blameless. This is an illness which they had no control over and certainly didn't put into me. Much like cancer. If I'd had cancer, would that be my parents' fault? Of course not. Well, I have alcoholism, and it's not their fault either. That's how I understand it today. And the thing about that was, blaming my parents for all those years, it really allowed me to remain a victim and never to take any responsibility for the mess that my life became. It was always someone else's fault, and it was always because when I was a child, I was damaged in unique ways that you could never really understand. And that's why I've ended up so screwed up. So that justifies me doing what I did. Anyway, I grew up in this normal family, a nice family in a nice neighbourhood. And I went to a nice school, and I was good at school. School wasn't a problem for me. And I do remember as a child being very, very self-conscious and very worried about what other people thought of me. So much so that it would stop me doing things at certain times. I would be afraid to take part in sports and stuff like that because I was worried that I would screw up and people wouldn't like me. So even as a child, I was experiencing a lot of fear that was stopping me enjoy life the same way other people did. I wasn't carefree when I was a child, and I didn't realise that's what it was at the time. I also had a great fantasy life in my head. I would walk home from school and I would make up these big stories where I was like the hero and all that. And maybe that's normal, but like I was still doing that 20 years later. I was still living in that sort of, one day I'm going to be somebody. One day I'm going to be a hero. One day I'm going to be this. One day I'm going to be that. And what was happening to me, as I'll relate to you, once I started drinking, one day I was going to be locked up or dead. That's really what was happening to me. Anyway, I first came into contact with alcohol when I was 13 years old. And it was one of the best nights of my life. It was absolutely amazing. What a discovery. Me and my friend stole this bottle of homemade wine off my dad. My dad made this disgusting homemade wine. This stuff, I believe, was vermouth, right? But it tasted like, I don't know, like, it just tasted disgusting, like that stuff you put in the car to wash the windows, you know, it sort of smelled really, really bad. So me and this guy, Craig Todd, we took it down by the back of the local elementary school. We smashed the top off it because we couldn't get the cork out. And, you know, it's all like jagged, broken glass, and we drank this stuff down, and it was disgusting, it tasted horrible. And about 5 minutes later, I had this tremendously powerful experience. I was just like, wow, this is unbelievable, you know, and I just started laughing, and I was rolling about the place. And I loved it, and I can't remember getting home that night. I got drunk out of my mind, I blacked out, and a blackout is just when you're walking around doing things and you can't remember it the next day. And I do remember vomiting the next morning with my school uniform on into the toilet at home. But there was a part of me that was saying to me, that was fantastic last night. I can't wait to do that again. And that was 13. I ended up in AA at age 25. And for the next 12 years, I generally repeated that over and over again. Usually I would steal, manipulate or con in order to get the finance to secure the alcohol or whatever else it was I was doing. And then I would start to drink. And once, I didn't know it at the time, but as soon as I started to drink, I had no control over the amount I took. You know, and for a long time I wondered, what is it that makes me an alcoholic? Is it the fact that I did all these crazy things? I could stand here for about, you know, easily 3 or 4 hours and tell you some really horrendous things I did when I was drunk. But I don't believe that makes me an alcoholic. I don't believe that makes me an alcoholic at all. What I have come to understand is it's that reaction to the first drink of alcohol that sets off that allergy. How else could I explain that I would start to drink with no intention at all of getting drunk? And I would end up absolutely out of my mind with alcohol. Once I started to drink, I couldn't seem to control how much I drank, and I couldn't guarantee my behaviour either. And more often than not, I would end up insanely drunk. Sometimes I would get away with it for a while, and that would renew my hope that I didn't have a drink problem. Maybe 2 or 3 times I would go out drinking and nothing too bad would happen. And I would think, you know, I was making a big deal out of that. I was making a big deal out of that drinking. I'm not that bad. And then sure enough, boom, another explosion. So that allergic reaction to alcohol is one of the symptoms of alcoholism. And eventually in AA, I was told that if I have had that allergic reaction to alcohol, once I start drinking, I can't control the amount I take, then that is a telltale sign that I am, in fact, an alcoholic. And the other telltale sign is that I was completely unable to quit on my own. I couldn't quit. I couldn't stay stopped. I could stop, but I couldn't stay stopped. And that really became a big issue because the things I did when I drank became very, very ugly. One of the things that started to happen quite early on was I became very violent when I was drunk. Now again, not everybody in AA is violent. You could never. This is important for me because if I just try to make myself an alcoholic by have I done exactly the same things as that person, then the answer is going to be no. There's people in AA who never raised a hand to anyone drunk or sober. So this is the drama, I feel like, that comes along with drinking for some people. But I became insanely violent when I was drunk, and you know, I'm very ashamed of that today because, you know. That I don't think that needs to be part of my nature. But give me a few hours to drink and I would become dangerously antisocial. And I would get ugly on occasion, smashing up apartments and things like that. Terrifying women that I was involved with, they were scared of me. And, you know, that's something that, as time went on, became a great source of guilt to me. So, anyway, I drank through school and mostly just drank at the weekends. And was already having problems with alcohol, already getting into trouble. To some extent, it's acceptable when you're 15, 16 years old to do crazy stuff when you're drunk. But for me, that just continued to get worse. I started to suffer from what I would call depressions, I suppose, you know, and feeling really sorry for myself a lot of the time. What's wrong with me? Why am I like this? Why am I doing this? started to toy around with the idea of killing myself a lot as well. You know, people would just be better off if I was dead. And then began a period of moving around. I've lived so many different places. What I would do is I would be always make a new start. So I would pack up my bags and leave home, because it was their fault, right, that I'm all screwed up. And I would get a job in a town and I would start afresh. Well, within usually a couple of hours, I would have met the other drinkers. And we would have arranged to go out that night, and then I would get drunk, and the whole thing would start again, and a few months later I would leave that town. So I started moving around all over the place. And looking back on it now, what I was trying to do was, I was trying to get away from the problem. I saw that the problem was something outside of me. It was the town I lived in, it was the people I grew up with, it was my friends that drank too much, it was my parents, it was my ex-girlfriend, it was whatever. That was the problem. So if I removed myself, it's logical the problem should go away. Well, it didn't. It came with me and it got worse. And one time I went to Japan. I got a job in Japan and I actually lived there. That's how far away I went from Scotland. You can't really get much further away from Scotland than Japan. And I still continue to get drunk and it still continued to get worse, even after going all that distance. So I really tried to run away from this. And it didn't work. Other ways, I'll just tell you, by my mid-teens, I'm a violent drunk. I started blacking out a lot. So when I was drunk, I couldn't often remember what I did. And I would do a lot of crazy things when I was drunk as well. A lot of acts of petty vandalism, breaking into shops and stuff like that. When I was drunk, I'd wake up in the morning, oh my goodness, you know. And a lot of just really bizarre things would happen to me when I was drunk. And on it went like that. I tried to control my drinking by taking other drugs. And I went through a period of probably about 4 or 5 years. I can't really remember. My teenage years are lost. I don't really know what happened in my teens and early 20s. I've got markers through there, but I wasted that time. Normal people were going out and taking girls out and dating them and building a life for themselves. I was destroying my life through that period. And I really lost that 12-year period of my life due to drinking. But anyway, my reaction to alcohol was so abnormal that I found if I took these other substances and alcohol, or just these other substances, then I could actually be mellow, you know. And I spent like 4 or 5 years in a bedroom in my parents' house listening to Pink Floyd. And I don't really remember much about it, to be honest. You know, I was doing it every single day. And I was getting drunk once or twice a month. And eventually that became, I couldn't stand it anymore because my mind really started to crack. The paranoia and so on got so bad. But anyway, the drinking continued. It was the constant through the whole thing. I loved getting drunk. I loved getting roaring drunk. But I didn't love what it was doing to my life. The stealing was another thing that I want to talk about. I stole from my family tremendously. And that really hurt them. And it caused a lot of problems in my family home. People couldn't leave any money down. I would steal it. Eventually, I quit working. I thought that I was above working. I thought I was so intelligent that I didn't have to work. And they should go out and work. And I lived like a monster in the attic in my parents' house, like a vampire. And I would wait until they'd all gone out to work. And then I would come downstairs and just eat all the food and try and steal anything I could get together. And by that time, I was frightened to go outside on certain days because I thought people were looking at me. And it's very, very paranoid. I ruined a lot of friendships. I lost a lot of relationships that could have been good. I ruined them by my behaviour. People would want to get to know me because naturally I'm quite a friendly person and I can be quite, you know, witty and so on. But what would happen is that would be an act to try and get you to like me. And then I would feel so nervous that I would want to drink, to relax myself. And as soon as I took the first drink, I would be off again. And then I would sometimes do the most insane, disgusting things. And people would be like, oh, get him away from me. So I ended up actually very, very lonely. And I remember the last few years of drinking, wondering why nobody called. Because the only people that put up with me were 2 or 3 other guys that were the same as me. They were crazy alcoholics. We would get together and use each other. If you had money and I didn't have any, I would be your best buddy. You're buying tonight. And then you would come and leech on to me some other time. So that was That was the friendships I had. They were all based on whether you had any alcohol or money and what you could get for me. And it was, I was always keeping score, you know. And that's just the way it was. Anyway, so I decided, I had a lot of dead-end jobs. I moved around. I was in London. I was all over Britain. I was in France for a while. I was always running away. And I ended up coming back home, and I decided I was going to go to college. And the only reason I went to college is free in Scotland. But the only reason I went to college was that my friend, Mad Mick, who I used to drink with, he had gone to college the year before, and he said, it's great. He says, the booze is really, really cheap, and there's loads and loads of women, and the course is pretty easy. So, you know, come along. So on that basis, really, that's how I decided what I was going to do at college. I just went and did the same as him. And that's how I made a decision that was to affect my whole future, you know. And so I went and I did it. And I found college pretty easy, and I liked it, because I wasn't expected to work, and I hated working. I really didn't like working, and I could sponge off my parents like a parasite, you know, because I knew they really wanted me to go. So I would emotionally blackmail them to get the money. And that's what they did, because I've come to understand that, you know, my parents really didn't know what to do with me. They thought they had a son, but they didn't. They had an alcoholic son. And there's a big difference. And they'd never really seen an alcoholic up close before, and they didn't know what was wrong with me. All they saw was that I was very unhappy. I seemed to suffer from these fits of isolationism. I wouldn't talk to anyone. I was very removed from them. And I would be very, very hurtful towards my family. I was very selfish, stealing, lying, letting them down all the time, saying hurtful, mean things to them. And after a while, my family started to withdraw from me because they just couldn't stand it anymore. But my parents never ever walked away from me. You know, there was a couple of times. I remember one time my mother came really close to kicking me out of her house because I'd stolen money from her. Money she needed, I just stole it, you know. And I remember that feeling of I'd spent the money and got drunk, you know, of course. And maybe it lasted me 2 days, and then I had to go home. I've got no money, and I'm walking round and round the house, circling the house. I don't want to go in, because I know when I go in, they're going to be like, where's that money? And I'm going to have to lie and try and start an argument to get the focus off me and put the blame back on them. And that's what I was always able to do. No matter what I did to you, this mind of mine, in an instant, could turn it around and blame you for it. I could probably steal your car and say it was your fault. You know, that's the sort of thing that mental gymnastics I'm capable of. And I had to do that to survive as an alcoholic, because I was treating people so badly. And the toll that this was taking inside me, looking back on it now, I ended up carrying around a huge mass of guilt, and a huge mass of fear, and a huge mass of anger. That was the three constants in my life. I was very, very guilty, because deep down I knew I shouldn't be treating people this way. And I was very, very afraid. What was I afraid of? I was afraid of meeting people that I had screwed over. I was afraid of meeting people who had seen me drunk last week and do that stuff in the bar that I shouldn't have done. I was afraid of meeting the people who I borrowed the money off and I said I would pay them back. I was always afraid. I was eventually afraid of meeting my own family on the stairs in the house. So I would wait to go to the restroom. I'd be holding it in because I didn't want to go outside in case I met my mother or father or one of my nice sisters on the stairs, and I couldn't look them in the eye anymore when I was sober. And that's the way I started to feel. And then the anger that I felt, I was eventually angry and hateful at everyone and everything. The conversations in my mind would always be putting everybody down. Look at the state of him. Look at her hair. Look at his trousers. You know, always put, who does he think he is? Just putting everybody down all the time. And I realised that today it's just as true as it was then. The only reason I put anybody down is to build myself up. You know, I'll judge and criticise you so I feel a bit better about me, as a bit superior, you know. And that's as true in EA as it is anywhere else, you know. But anyway, so that's what happened. It got worse, and it continued to get worse. I want to very quickly touch on some of the ways I tried to shape up and be a nice guy, maybe much like my father. He's a very nice man. He's a real gentleman, and he's a man that's loved me his whole life. The reason I know him and my mother love me is because they were always there for me. They never turned their back on me, and they always bailed me out when the heat was on. That's how people like my mum and dad show love. So, but that was never good enough for me, of course. Anyway, the first thing I think that happened was I tried to run away, and I've told you already that didn't work. The next thing that happened was I tried religion. And this was my father's idea. I didn't understand, but I was putting a tremendous strain on my parents' marriage. When I was a teenager, my parents were like, oh my God, what on earth are we going to do with this boy? They were constantly under pressure. My father, years later, told me he didn't want to come home from work a lot of times because he didn't know what was going to be going down in the house when he got home. And it was usually me that had started it all off. I could have that house in an uproar, causing fights and all that, you know, with my resentments and my anger and my jealousies. So he told me that years later, and him and my mother, their marriage really was, and not in trouble, but it was very, very strained for maybe 10 years. And it was mostly due to me. And at the time, I hated them, you know. So I'll never understand what I put those people through, the people nearest and dearest to me, and the damage I caused inside them. So anyway, he goes on this thing, this religious thing, and he comes back and he suggests that I should go. So I wrote a letter to the people. It's a religious community, they're Christians, they're very nice people. It's the Iona community, it's off the coast of Scotland on an island. There's been an abbey there since 563 AD. So if you're going to get religion, that's the place to get it, right? There's a long history there. So anyway, they accept me, and I have to go up there for 6 weeks, and I'm to bake bread in the kitchen as a volunteer, and just take part in the life of this community. Well, I went up there, and I really didn't like those people. And the reason I didn't like them, and the reason I didn't like religion, looking back on it now, is that they were all really happy. And they all were really nice people, and they had a direction in life, and they seemed pretty contented. And I was one of the most unhappy, discontented people you could ever meet. And I saw them, and they were laughing and smiling, and in my head I'd be saying, they're not really happy. They're not really happy, they're just putting that on, that's just an act. Because you see, I never knew what it was to feel happiness. I remember reading books, you know, like romance books, and you know, books where there's a theme in it of love, or watching a movie and the characters fall in love. I would look at these things, and in my mind, I actually thought that that was just made up, and that people never actually really felt that way, because I had never felt that way. I didn't realise that you actually could fall in love. I didn't realise that you actually could like people and be happy and so satisfied with life, because I was such a malcontented person. So anyway, I go up here, and I hated the Christians, and I was really mean to them. Bad-mouthing them, bad-mouthing the religion, you know, blah, blah, blah. And the upshot of it was that I found out where they were keeping the communion wine. And they had a no-lock-doors policy on this island, because it's like a mile and a half by 3 miles. So I was going sneaking in at night time, stealing this Spanish sherry, 15% proof, I remember. And drinking this stuff, and you know, so whatever it was that was wrong with me, religion did not have the power to straighten me out at that time. And I'm not standing here talking religion down. Please don't take that. I'm not commenting on that at all. All I'm saying is that with my drink problem, with my alcoholism, that didn't work for me. It didn't provide me a solution that was going to work at that time. The next thing I think I tried was counselling, and the reason I went to see a counsellor was that I had become so violent in my relationship with my girlfriend at the time that she gave me an ultimatum, and she said, this has to stop. If you don't get help for this and sort this out, I'm out of here. And I needed her. I needed her, and the reason I needed her was I was obsessed with her. That relationship, without that, it was going to be just me and the booze. She was like the last thing that I had in my life. Everything else had left now. All the friends had gone. There was a few alky friends who would come round once in a while. I was virtually unemployable. Yeah, I was still doing okay at college. But other than that, she was the only thing in my life, and I needed her. So I started going for counselling. I went for a whole year. This wasn't something I just went to once or twice. I went for 1 year, and I believed I poured my guts out to this guy. I told him everything. And after that, year, he told me, Graham, the reason you're screwed up is that your family didn't treat you right when you were a little boy. They didn't love you in the right way, and you've been damaged. And I think you should go and let these people know that. So I proceeded to go home and let them have it. And so on top of 10 years of crazy alcoholism, my parents now had to suffer me blaming it all on them. And that's a pretty shameful episode in my life, to be honest. But at the time, I believed I was doing the right thing. I was very misguided. Another thing, so counselling. I think the problem with counselling for me, and I went for counselling in sobriety as well. If you really want to get into your head, go for counselling in sobriety and get the focus right on the problem. And what I found about counselling was that this guy would tell me all these different ways I'd been hurt, and it was all based on, though, the idea that if I can just understand myself, then I'll be all right. But I think I do understand myself, and it wasn't all right. I couldn't stop drinking. I couldn't get my life back on track. I kept spinning out of control. So the power I needed wasn't in counselling for me, and it may be for other people. I really want to say that. I'm not standing up here saying there's only one way to get sober. And if you're, you know, if you're into counselling, you're wrong, or if you're into religion, you're wrong. I'm not saying that. I really think that people have to find out what works for them. All I'm talking about is what didn't work for me and what has worked for me. I think that's very important to say that. I think sometimes in AA we can come across as a bit dogmatic, you know. If you don't do it this way, you're wrong. I don't know if you're wrong. All I can say is what's worked for me and what hasn't worked for me. Anyway, so counselling wasn't the solution for me. And the other thing that I tried was those self-help books. My mother had by this time accumulated a library of self-help books. I never understood that the reason that she was getting all these self-help books was probably because I was driving her nuts. But anyway, I started reading these books, you know, and it was like creative visualization and, you know, happiness in 7 days, all these sort of titles. And I would read this stuff and I would get right into it for 2 or 3 days. I'd be really enthusiastic. And then what would happen, of course, is, you know, I would just sort of fall away from it and I would end up depressed again. So that was it really, and it was very chaotic. I go home one Sunday afternoon to my mother's house. I was living with that girlfriend. I wasn't really living with her. I was maybe there at the weekends, and then I was at my mum's, and sometimes I would stay at hers during the week, back to mum's. Her and I were always falling out. I always had my bags, you know, coming and going. Anyway, my mother says, I remember it vividly, she's sitting reading this big newspaper. And I walk in and she looks up at me and she says, there's jobs in Japan in this newspaper, you should go for that. And I applied for the job and I got it. Just like that, boom, and I graduated college that year. And I finished up with the counsellor and the counsellor said to me, Graham, you've had a few tough times, you've had a bad deal with that family. If I was you, I would just try and meet a nice girl. And, you know, share a bottle of wine with her now and again, you'll be fine. Just watch yourself. You know, just watch yourself. And I remember getting on that plane, it was July the 27th, 1997, and I was flying business class, London to Tokyo, I had a new suit, my parents had given me lots of money to go, and I had this job I was going out there to, and I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, I've arrived. And I can't ever remember a time when I thought that I had it so under control and I was such a success. It was that day, and I'm on the plane, and the sun's shining in the window, we're taking off, and it's free drink in business class, and I meet a guy from Scotland, and we, you know, I'll just have a few, and I'm off again. I got trashed on the plane, I got trashed in Tokyo, and I ended up at the place I was to work, and it was just me and the alcohol, and I had loads and loads of money, and I basically just fell to pieces. And by this time, alcohol wasn't working anymore. This is what was happening when I drank now. I would try not to drink around normal people because I didn't want people to see what I was like. I had a very good understanding that when I drank, the chances are I was going to get ugly because I have hundreds of experiences that tell me that. I'm not stupid. I just can't stop drinking on my own. So I would try and manage my drinking around who I was going to drink around. Anyway, when I started to drink, by this time, alcohol wasn't taking away that fear of people. What it seemed to do was make it even stronger. alcohol wasn't stopping my brain racing, it seemed to make it even worse. And what would happen to me is I would just have a small amount of alcohol on some occasions, and then I would pass out, but I'd be walking around doing things. And then there were other times I would drink so much I couldn't even get drunk. I could drink for the whole weekend and not get drunk. And then the next weekend I would have, you know, a couple of shots of spirits and a few beers, and I'd be in a blackout. So I really didn't know what was going to happen. And my behaviour was getting more and more unpredictable and ugly as time went on. And it all ended up in a hotel room with a drunken Irishman. We were at a conference for work. He was drunk. His name was Gordon. I was drunk. And by this time, sometimes I would, like, all upset and cry when I was drunk. And tell you how bad I had it. You know, I'd be like, oh! And I'd tell you how bad my life was and all this, my problem, my struggles with the drink and all this stuff. And this guy listened to this. I don't know for how long, but both he and I were very drunk. And this guy looked at me and he said, you should go to Alcoholics Anonymous. They would sort you out. I found out years later his dad was a long time sober in AA. So I don't know why, but that stuck in my mind. And a couple of weeks later, I had what, you know, to this day, God willing, will be my last drunk. And that night, my last drunk, I decided I was not going to drink. No way am I drinking tonight. My new colleagues were coming to a party in my house. And I decided not to drink. And they all arrived, and they were drinking, and they all brought food, they were nice people, and I remember all the girls were dancing, and the music was playing, and I was standing there looking at them, and I just wanted to go over and take part, and I couldn't. I had this tremendous churning feeling in my stomach. I felt terrified, I felt everyone was looking at me, I'm a loser, I don't even know how to stand, and I ended up, what always happened to me, I thought, I'll just have one beer to relax me, and I'll be alright. And that was 8 o'clock. By 9 o'clock, I had cleared the house out. I drank, I went into a blackout, and I did a lot of crazy stuff. Smashed the house up, went nuts. All these people left in disgust. And by this time, I'm drinking in the mornings as well. The weekends are starting to get longer. You know? The weekend's not just Friday night anymore. It's now Friday night, Saturday morning, Saturday night, maybe even Sunday morning. And it was out of control. Anyway, I'll tell you what happened to me. I want to move on. So I wake up after this binge, and curled up in a ball on the floor, and crying and all that. That wasn't unusual, feeling sorry for myself. Terrible hangover. And I suddenly sort of, I realised, you know, I'm really screwing up. My whole life's getting really screwed up. And this drink thing, it's really out of hand, and I can't do anything about it, and it keeps getting worse. I started realising what I'd done to my family and friends and all this sort of stuff, and I decided I just don't want to live anymore. I've just had enough, and I was an atheist at this time, but I said, to whatever, I've had enough, I want you to kill me right now. I can't stand it anymore. I've had enough of this. I don't want to live. And that moment right there, I didn't know, but that was to be the turning point for me. And since that moment, the desire to drink got replaced by a desire not to drink. And I can't explain it. And it was very weak at the beginning. But as the years have gone on, it's got stronger. So after that, I phoned Alcoholics Anonymous. And the people in AA really came to my aid. And so I can't take any credit for getting sober. I didn't really plan to come to AA. I didn't plan to be an alcoholic. I didn't plan any of it. It's just how it happened. I thought of Alcoholics Anonymous and I phoned them up. And they told me to sit tight and not to take the first drink. And I was to call this guy every day, and they tried to find people near me. And they found out I was in the remote north of Japan. And by sheer coincidence, that year, within about 30 minutes drive from my house, there were living 3 sober American members of AA, and they were only going to be in Japan for 1 year, but they'd been placed by accident. They were working right next to where I lived. They found out about me, and they started an AA meeting up in my house on a Sunday night, so I couldn't get away from them. And I've been sober ever since then. Because of Alcoholics Anonymous and sponsorship, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink or a mind-altering chemical, prescribed or otherwise, since then. and I can't take the credit for that. And these people, I went up to Michigan last week and visited them. That guy became my first sponsor. And there were two females there, his wife and another woman. And we had our little meeting every Sunday night, and he told me to call him every night at 10 o'clock. He basically told me what's wrong with me. He said, you have a terminal illness called alcoholism, and if you don't take the medicine, you will die. You will drink again, and eventually you will kill yourself, or you'll die, or bad stuff will happen to you. You really have a choice here. You can have more of the same of what you've been experiencing. And I'd really had enough of that. You know, I'd really had enough. I did not want to live like that anymore. He said, or you can have a new way of life in Alcoholics Anonymous. But to get that way of life in here, you're going to have to do something. And he started feeding me all these tapes, you know, that I would play in my car. You know, particularly one speaker called Clancy, I would listen to his tapes over and over again, because he made a lot of jokes, and I liked the jokes, because I hadn't laughed for a long time. And this guy got me going through the steps straight away. I think I was in AA in October, and by December he'd taken me through the steps. You know, he sent me deadlines. You know, I want the fourth step done by this day. We're going to, and so on. And he just kept me moving right through it. And that's the way it was for me in the beginning. And I'm very grateful to that guy, because I think doing that removed enough of the resentment, the fear and the guilt for hurting other people, that I was able to stay sober long enough to explore deeper into Alcoholics Anonymous. But I think just by coming here and maybe going to a meeting once a week and, you know, praying that I'm not going to drink, I don't think I would have made it. I had to take some actions, you know, I had to take some actions. And that guy kept going on about action, action, action. You need to be active. You need to go to lots of meetings. You need to get a sponsor. You need to do the steps. You need to be involved in a home group. You need to make commitments. And, you know, you need to be really committed to your sobriety. And he really impressed upon me that if I didn't stay sober, then my life wasn't going to be worth living anyway. So sobriety really had to become the first thing in my life. And that's as true today as it was then. I have a wonderful life today. I really do. I have a beautiful relationship beyond my wildest dreams. I have a newborn son. He's absolutely perfect. I have a nice vehicle that I drive around in. I live in a beautiful apartment. I have a nice job and a nice place, and I like the people I work beside. My family all like me again, and they're talking to me. But see, if I pick up a drink of alcohol, that's all going out the window. So Alcoholics Anonymous and the actions I do to stay sober just have to be, no matter what, the most important thing in my life. Because if I don't stay sober, I'm not going to have a life. It's as simple as that. And I need to remind myself of that a lot, because life, as sobriety goes on, gets so distracting. You know? It's so tempting to say, well, I haven't drank for years, come on. Surely I can cut back a bit now. Let those new guys do the service work. I don't need to do that stuff anymore. I've been around the block a few times. You know, that's the temptation for me. And it's always justified by, well, I need to spend more time with this person, or my son needs me, or whatever. But there's always a justification that sounds great until I'm sitting in the bar drunk. So I really need to be careful I do not get distracted from what's really wrong with me. What's wrong with me is I'm an insane alcoholic, and if I drink, I'm screwed. That's the bottom line here. And I need to be reminded of that over and over again, because it seems I've seen people that stop going to meetings and stop coming to AA, they seem to forget that they're alcoholics. And if that can happen to them, I need to realise it can happen to me. I'm no different from them. Anyway, this guy took me through the steps. I'd finished Alcoholics Anonymous. I got my big star. Yeah, I'm done. And I went absolutely nuts. I didn't understand. I thought alcoholism was a drink problem. I thought I had a drink problem. I'd stopped drinking, so therefore I should be happy every day and life's wonderful. Well, I've come to understand since that alcoholism isn't a drink problem. If you've got a drink problem, you don't. There's good news. If you've got a drink problem, you don't need to bother coming to these meetings. Just stop drinking and you'll be fine. Life will be wonderful, you'll feel good, your family will like you, you'll be able to get on in life and feel great if you have a drink problem. I don't have a drink problem, I have alcoholism, and that is very, very different from a drink problem. Alcoholism is how I feel when I'm sober. I don't like being sober. That was the whole problem. I hate it. I don't feel good when I'm sober. I'm not walking around smiling. Great to be sober. I hate it. And I always hated it. I felt afraid. I felt resentful. I felt guilty. I felt I wasn't good enough. I felt ashamed. I felt dissatisfied. Oh, give me a big list of bad words and I felt it when I was sober. And alcohol took all of that away and made me feel wonderful. And I needed to understand that if I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm not doing anything, if I'm not spiritually active, and those spiritual actions are just the ones that they say at every meeting, go to meetings, get a sponsor, do the steps, help others, be in a home group, those are the spiritual actions we're talking about. We're not talking about building altars and putting cakes on and burning things. It's very simple in here. If I'm not taking those actions, then I'm going to experience alcoholism untreated in sobriety, and it's awful. It's actually worse than it was when I drank because I'm getting no relief. And I've experienced that several times in recovery, cutting back on the actions, backing off from AA, and it always seemed like a great idea. And I ended up absolutely nuts, miserable, suicidal one time, just absolutely off my trolley. Unbelievable. So anyway, eventually this guy fired me as his sponsee, and I got another sponsor, and this guy directed me through the book. The first guy wasn't a big book guy, he was just an take the actions. And that was great for me because he never talked about God. I didn't believe in God, I was an atheist. I believed there was no such thing as God, it was all nonsense for weak fools, not intelligent guys like me. So this guy did talk about God all the time, and he was right into the big book, and he got me into the big book. And he had another sponsor at the time, and I wanted my sponsor to like me more than the other guy. So I studied the book all the time to try and impress him. My character defect helps me because then I got a knowledge of what's in the book. But I've since come to realise that knowing what's in the book and doing what's in the book are two very different animals. I went through a stage in AA of having the knowledge of the book and criticising other people for not doing it. And I wasn't doing it myself. You know, running around with a big book under my arm. Save the world. Try to convert people to Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh my goodness. So anyway, that doesn't work, but please feel free. You end up alone, you know, people run away from you. That guy's crazy. The angry big book guy. You know. So anyway, that didn't work. And you know, time went on in Alcoholics Anonymous, and this second sponsor really helped me. Very disturbing thing happened a few months ago. I have a friend who was also sponsored by this guy. This guy's name was Lance. Lance knew that book better than anybody I've met before or since. And I know a lot of people that know a lot about that book. He was very, very good. He was very charismatic. And when he spoke, I was like, wow, the beautiful way of putting it. It really made sense. Sponsored a lot of guys, highly active in AA. Sponsored another guy called Jim, who this year was 10 years sober. And Jim was a great friend of mine, very, very active in AA. These were guys I looked up to. I really respected them. They were great members of Alcoholics Anonymous. I found out through a mutual friend that Jim's drunk now. He got drunk at 10 years sober, and Lance doesn't go to AA anymore. And nobody really knows what's going on with him. And I heard that, and I was like, oh my God. You know, these guys were my idols when I was in early sobriety. How can that happen? And I talked to my present sponsor, and it's just what I was talking about before. Really, now, if you're in AA and you're sober and you've taken the steps and you've got a sponsor and you're in a home group and you're doing that, there's really only two things that can go wrong. The first one is I can get distracted. And I always get distracted by pleasure, and it always is something out there. It's a relationship, it's a job, it's money. Money's a great one. You know, it's a family, whatever it is, it's a distraction that starts to take me away very, very slowly from my primary purpose, which is to stay sober and help other people. And gradually, over time, 10 years, just a little bit at a time, and then I'm only going to one meeting a week, and then I'm not going to any meetings a week, and I don't have a sponsor anymore, and I'm drunk. And the other thing that can happen is that I can have a defiant stand against something in AA. Let's say something happens in my life that I don't agree with, and it's not going my way. If I can't come to some sort of acceptance about that, then I'm in big trouble. I mean, really, I'm in big trouble. And that's something else that could force me in my sick mind to leave Alcoholics Anonymous. So anyway, I went back to Scotland, and that was fine. I went back to live there after 3 years in Japan. In Japan, I was extremely active in AA. I started up a couple of groups with this guy. We went into hospitals and talked to wet drunks. We really tried to carry the message. I stayed sober, so did this other guy. I went back to Scotland, and gradually, over 4 years, I went from being one of the most active people I knew in AA to being one of the least active people I knew in AA. And that was amazing how that happened. I still had some service positions in AA. I was like treasurer of intergroup. I like to tell people that, you know. And really, I was very, very miserable. My financial affairs were insane. My relationships with women were insane. And I was a very, very disturbed person. And that was a very dark time in my life because I had untreated alcoholism and I started to become convinced that AA wasn't working for me and couldn't help me. And that I actually had other problems that needed other help. And for a while I started going to other meetings and I went for counselling for a brief spell. And I ended up more and more screwed up, more and more focused on me. And less in the solution that Alcoholics Anonymous offers. Anyway, I got the chance to... I had a lot of experiences in AA in Scotland. Some good, some not so good. I got the chance to come and work in America, and I really wanted to come and work here. I knew AA was a lot better here than it was in Scotland, because most of the people I knew in Japan in AA were American people, and I liked what they talked about and the way they did things. So I ended up coming to America, but really as I see it now, it was another geographical change in sobriety. I was running away from my life in Scotland with the hope that I would find a better life here without having to do anything, without having to change. Change the scenery and things will be better, right? Wrong. You know, I ended up in Virginia Beach, and that's probably the lowest point of my sobriety. I think I was about 7 years sober at the time, and I just had lost all faith in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was barely going to one meeting a week, and it was awful. I got myself this crazy sponsor, and he was telling me all sorts of crazy stuff. You should go on antidepressants, you know, you need therapy, you need all this stuff, and I was listening to him and I was thinking, no, that guy's nuts. But anyway, fortunately I didn't do any of the stuff he suggested, and I went to this conference. It was the Pockets of Enthusiasm conference at Virginia Beach. I only went because I knew Clancy was speaking and I'd listened to his tapes in my very early sobriety and I wanted to see him. So I showed up and I was sitting there hateful, you know, no friends, went on my own. Trying to sit at the back, arms folded, not talking to anyone. And this really nice young man started talking to me. He was with some friends. He looked really happy. That really upset me that he was so happy, you know, because I was so unhappy. And all the people in AA smiling and having a good time, I hated them. Don't know what happened, but he introduced me to this guy he said was his sponsor. And I had a very, very brief conversation with that man. And at the end of that conversation, that man was my new sponsor. And I don't really know how that happened to this day. But he was basically like, right, I'm your new sponsor. And I was like, okay. And I was to meet him at 7:30 the next morning and we were going to talk. So at 7:30 the next morning, I sat down and I told him exactly what was going on in my life. I went into, I spared no detail. I told him the truth about the things I was doing that I shouldn't have been doing. That's a very uncomfortable feeling if I'm coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. And my life outside is just like it was when I drank, except I'm not drinking. That is an awful feeling. That's why I was finding it more and more difficult to be in AA, is because I was acting contrary to what I'm trying to do in here. So anyway, this guy, thank goodness. You see, if I come into AA and I tell you the stuff I'm doing in my life, and I'm maybe not proud of it, and you judge me, and you tell me, oh, get away from me, you're disgusting. I just feel even more isolated. So this man didn't judge me. He just sat and nodded. And he said, yeah, he says, you're right on track. He said, you're 7 years sober and you've got untreated alcoholism. Welcome to AA. AA's full of people like you. He said, and hooking up with me and I'm going to hook you up back up with Alcoholics Anonymous could just well save your life. And he told me in no uncertain terms, all that other stuff has to stop. You need to focus on AA. AA has the power to solve all your problems. But you need to do it. And I was like, okay. And I gave it a try. Me and him went through the steps. He took me through the steps again. Quickly we went through them. And he got me into action. He told me I had to go to 5 meetings a week. I had to dress appropriately for the meetings. I had to be courteous at the meetings. And so on. And I got back into action in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have to tell you, the most miraculous things have happened since I did that. And I didn't do them. See what I was doing in sobriety? I was experiencing a lot of problems. I'll give you an example. Money. Money was a big problem for me in sobriety. I couldn't handle money. I ran up a lot of debt in sobriety. When I was drinking, nobody would lend me money. So I ran, you know, my financial affairs were a disaster in sobriety, and I really tried my best with all my willpower to sort them out. They got worse. The more I tried to fix these problems, the worse they got. And I couldn't understand that. And what this sponsor was saying to me was, never mind those problems. What are you doing in Alcoholics Anonymous? And I'm like, no, wait a minute, you don't understand this. And he's like, no, I don't want to talk about that. Tell me what you're doing in AA. And he actually put a gagging order on several problems in my life. I wasn't allowed to talk to him about them. I told him about them. He knew they were going on. And he said, I've no interest in that. It's your private life. I don't want to talk about that. Tell me what you're doing in Alcoholics Anonymous. Show me your action in AA. And it took some time, probably about a year. But what I suddenly realised was those problems had diminished and really turned over into not really being problems anymore. And I had nothing to do with that. All I did was do what that guy told me to do in AA. That's the only thing I did. I didn't focus on those problems and they were sorted out. And even now, standing here saying that, it all sounds a bit mysterious. But that's what happened. And it really is unbelievable. I've had things in sobriety that have been very difficult for me to accept. When life's going well and everything's going my way, because I have a lot of opinions about how my life should go, then it's just wonderful. It's all peachy, you know, and it's great to be here and great to be sober. Things come up in life that I don't agree with. And I had a situation recently which has been and continues to be very difficult to deal with. I was dating somebody, she got pregnant, and she decided to keep the baby even though I was no longer dating her. And the baby was born on July the 15th this year, my first ever child, born out of wedlock, and I didn't want anything to do with that. When I heard that that was happening, my first reaction was actually to leave the country. I decided, you know, Scotland looks good. And I'll just go and live in Scotland and screw the lot of them. They're not going to get me in Scotland. But you know, what happened was, so I just pretended it wasn't happening for a while. And then I had this attack of conscience. You know, and I realised, that's not right. I can't do that. And expect to live happily, I suppose. You know, that can't be the right thing to do. So what I had to do was talk to my sponsor about it, keep taking these actions in AA, and gradually I find myself showing up and taking this person who I do not like, and I do not like the way this person lives their life, taking them to the doctor's appointments and not saying anything. Not saying anything about the lifestyle at all, just shutting my big mouth and trying to be nice to this person. And I find myself now going over there every day and holding the baby and getting the baby overnight and looking after them. And my wonderful girlfriend and I, she's accepted that situation the way it is. And we have this beautiful little baby and we hang out with her and it's all right. The situation is still not good with the other person involved, but I don't know how that's going to work out. But the bottom line is, because I'm sober and because I'm in AA, I'm able to step up to the plate and meet my obligations today, when really what I want to do is run the hell away. And I feel ashamed. Where I come from, it's a shameful thing to have a child out of wedlock. I'm embarrassed to tell my family. I'm frightened to tell them that this is what's going on. But you know what? That people are going to do what they're going to do and they're going to think what they're going to think. I have no control over that. The important thing is that I do the right thing. And because I'm sober and because I'm in AA, I'm able to do the right thing more than I was before. And the greatest miracle in this for me is that I can keep my mouth shut around this individual. I have not got into it with her at all. I've never criticised her or said anything about her to her face. I said it behind her back. You know, and so that's some stuff that's going on in my life at the moment. And I know the way I want it to turn out. But the thing that's freaking me out at the moment is that if it doesn't turn out that way and I don't get what I want, I need to have acceptance. And I need to accept that that's the way it is and that I need to act appropriately no matter what happens. And, you know, I have faith that I can do that in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, the final thing I want to touch on is just, you know, my relationships in general. My relationships with my family. My family like me today. They're happy. When I come home, they come to meet me at the airport. You know, I'm not standing at the airport. There's nobody there. That's a horrible feeling. You know, calling your mum from the airport. Do you not remember I'm coming in today? You know. So, that's nice. It's nice to be around them and to try to treat them better. And my relationship with Heather today as well, you know, and I've found here someone that really has accepted me the way I am, including this unexpected and, for me, unwelcome piece of baggage, you know, this beautiful little boy. As I saw it, something really bad for me carrying around now. But, you know, what I find is that I'm able to form relationships with people today that were much better than they were before. And I don't really deserve to have people like that in my life, but they're in my life. And I just need to accept it, you know, and go with it. Because life really is good, but it's all as a result of taking those actions in AA. So anyway, I'm just about to finish. I really am. It's 5 minutes to seven almost. I want to thank Billy for asking me to come up here tonight and speak. And I encourage everybody, you know, and I encourage myself to really to give Alcoholics Anonymous a fair go, you know, to make this the primary thing in my life and to watch the rest of my life benefit from that. Thank you.